This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
The phone rang while I was getting my kids dressed, post-lesson at the local swimming pool last December. It was Vanessa Reed from the PRS Foundation. Congratulations, you've been chosen to be a musician in residence in Derry, Londonderry, for the City of Culture 2013, if you're happy to accept. Juggling wet toes and sopping swimwear, phone perched between shoulder and ear, I gave a half whoop of excitement, conscious of my voice echoing round the room. I punched the air for the benefit of my wife across the way. We were collectively triumphant, and for a few seconds after the phone call, I felt unreservedly glad of all the hard work to get to that point. Then, with a flick of a switch in my brain, I thought, oh no, what have I done? After all, I've never even been to Derry, I thought. Are the troubles really over? Do they even want a musician in residence, let alone an English one? That same evening, I turned on the television. First thing I saw was a programme on the City of Culture. Some key citizens of the city were being interviewed, painters of the famous murals, in fact. And there it was, right in front of me, the interview seemingly created to serenade me to sweet, uninterrupted insomnia. The City of Culture is too Anglo-centric, they were saying. It shouldn't be about the UK. It should be about Derry. Who here even wants the Royal Ballet? Or the Turner Prize? And for my own benefit, I added, and who wants an English piano player with big boots and a Cockney accent turning up with his big ideas? I actually have a very welcome history in this type of thing. Over the past few years, due to a blossoming relationship with the British Council, myself and my band have been sent to, let's say, less obvious destinations to play our music. Playing in Sudan, Egypt and Algeria to enthusiastic locals, we sometimes joke that we were some kind of crack musical reconnaissance unit sent in by the British government to curry favour. Where next, we would ask ourselves? Iraq? Afghanistan? Well, Derry, as a matter of fact. I say this with a sense of irony, but some people do think of Derry as having levels of danger on a par with these places, if, that is, they've never been. If you take the mainland press at face value, you can spend your life avoiding the place. To put it plainly, the voice that you hear coming out of Derry is quite often one of come here at your own risk. I was indoctrinated in this message, but I was also aware of how my views had been radically altered by getting my feet on the ground in North Africa, and I fully expected to be doing the same in Northern Ireland. Certainly, in our African trips, we had really enjoyed seeing how powerful our brand of music could be. Transcending language, we thrilled in presenting music that spoke of a common experience for all. Our outlook in life as musicians is to make friends wherever we go, and our handshake, if you like, is the commonality of our music. So it was that I landed at the beginning of the year at Derry Airport with some apprehension, but a burgeoning sense of liberation. I was met by the tireless Martin McGill, Marty to his friends. In fact, one of a host of Martys I've encountered in this city. I am notoriously bad with names, but I've found that calling a familiar face Marty has got me off the hook at least half of the time. Marty was to be my right-hand man, though like many things in this city, that wasn't all that clear. It just kind of happened. I instantly liked Marty. A genuine soul and boundless energy, he has quite the most unique telephone sign-off I have ever encountered. All his telephone conversations end with the words, "That'll do." And that's it, the phone goes down. First time he did it to me, I must have stood there a full 30 seconds before I realised we were done. Marty is one of the main guys at the fabulous Nerve Centre, a music and arts centre within the famous city walls, unlike any other I've seen. When one thinks of an arts centre, one tends to think of a slightly stuffy, hushed space with an under-attended cafe that serves Nicaraguan coffees and vegan quiche. The Nerve Centre, however, is very real. Actually, an amazingly rich facility with studio space, an inbuilt venue and the most modern of musical technology available for all to use. It's peopled with teenagers with nose rings, beanies and the right kind of sneer for rock and roll. Overseen, vaguely, by staff that have elevated that sneer to sit happily with corduroy trousers, but still playing bands to bleed the ears at night. Just inside the door is a cafe, but this one serves everything with chips or beans. My main priority here as musician in residence is to compose a piece which will be performed in concert at the end of the year. However, it soon emerged as the year began that there are a great many other aspects of the City of Culture that I could contribute to. The Music Promise, for instance. The Music Promise is an incredibly valuable and positive year-long plan to give every single youth in the city the opportunity to get involved in music, in one form or another. My new mate Marty is, as it happens, heavily involved in this. So he very quickly filled my itinerary with visits to youth groups, schools, young choirs, etc. I'm not one for a plan, but then what musician is? Jamming, improvisation, the sheer dread of getting on stage. These elements push one to think on your feet. Little did I know, however, just how far Derry is prepared to take this philosophy. The city simply doesn't make a plan. Suggest an hour before showtime that perhaps we should run through a few things and prepare to be met with blank faces. The city just jams. It has the most naturally gifted culture of improvisation I have ever encountered. It's more jazz than New Orleans. Marty had alluded to this in the car from the airport on that first day, but I was still ill-prepared for just how far they can take it. I'd barely set foot in Derry when I found myself on my first Music Promise outing. In front of a school hall full of children, and with nothing more than a few seconds' notice, a microphone was thrust in my hand. Looking across the stage for advice, all I got back was, "You'll be grand." And as I took the microphone from Marty, he whispered, "Keep her lit." Good advice, probably, if you knew what it meant. So I talked to this and many other youth groups and schools about my experiences of growing up around music. How I was trained as a classical pianist and played concert halls with orchestras as a child, but never intended to do it for a living. How a soul band arrived in my life when I was 13 and sparked my enthusiasm. How I left the Royal Academy of Music in shame, frustrated by the lack of performance opportunities, and then found myself at the Royal Albert Hall, aged 18, playing to pop audiences. How, and this bit always wakes up the slouching teenagers, I played on the albums of Adele and Emily Sandu. And once they're awake from that, I slip in the bit about me running my own band, the Neil Cowley Trio, at which point they aren't listening again and dream me up questions to ask about Adele. Through talking to these kids, I found that a lot of them were in the same boat as me all those years ago, going through the educational mill, but wanting desperately to thrash out some chords and express themselves. There is a tendency for formal musical education to create a cage around musical expression, whilst virtually ignoring the development of personal expression. My path was unique in that I was given the technical grounding of a pianist. Then at 14, by lucky chance, and outside the education system, I was given the opportunity to learn the art of playing by ear through listening to soul, blues, jazz, and beyond. What amazes me is how many musical kids there are here. In fact, just how much musicality there is in general in this city. I went on record recently as saying that I believe there is more music per square mile here than in any other place I've ever visited, and I meant it. The people of Derry are really not aware of how rich in musical output they are. Everyone has an instrument, it seems. Ask a Derryman if anyone plays an instrument in their family, and they'll tell you, "Well, I wouldn't say we're a musical family, except Uncle Joe, who plays the flute, Auntie Eileen, who plays the guitar, Dad plays the drums, Mum plays the piano, I play the harp, oh, my sister plays the violin." So just a small chamber orchestra then. That innate thirst for music was perhaps most evident when presented to me during an evening visiting youth projects. This particular group consisted of young people from both Catholic and Protestant families. This being my first experience of such a collaboration, I was duly nervous. My expectation was that any kind of non-mandatory musical class outside school hours was bound to be underattended. I readied myself for some pretty sorry-looking music tutors and some redundant instruments, but how wrong I was. The youth centre I arrived at was buzzing with young people, all experimenting with iPads, electronic drum kits, guitars, keyboards, real fascination from the kids. My keyboard was set up in front of them, whilst they worked away, kind of ignoring me. What on earth am I going to teach them, I thought. Clearly, throwing some high-end jazz or Stravinsky at them was not going to work. While stalling in the shadows, pondering, a young kid with a crew cut and a Man United t-shirt approached the piano and started bashing the keys in a fashion that would have worried a timpani. "Here we go," I thought, "I'm in trouble here." Walking up to him, he turned round with a scowl and said, "Is this yours?" "Yep," I said, with my best smile. "What am I going to teach him?" I repeated in my head. "Can you play Jaws?" he asked. The look on my face was a picture. Genius, I thought. A ubiquitous, two-noted, popular soundtrack. "I certainly can," I said, "and I can teach you to play it as well." An hour later, and this kid could not be torn away from the keyboard. He wanted to master every nuance of every bar of that piece, including dynamics and changes in meter. He loved his newly discovered performance piece and was asking me questions that only a spirit sparked with excitement and interest could muster. This lad had virtually rendered me a pupil with his unwitting crash course in teacher training. A lesson to me that with the right musical tools, a bridge could be built across any void. As part of the Music Promise programme and a TV show scheduled for CBBC, I have been mentoring a young lad from here by the name of Daryl. Daryl is a highly talented 15-year-old with a long-suffering mum who just wants him to pass his exams. Egged on by older relatives who have donated him family heirloom pianos and dusty sheet music, Daryl has no interest in anything other than music, hence his mother's agonies. This last year I have watched him blossom with confidence, culminating in a performance at a sell-out theatre before one of my shows just a few weeks back, where he took the roof off. It was mesmerising for me to watch this young man have the courage to perform a brilliantly executed and self-composed piece in front of a theatre full of people. If ever there is a question over the legacy of the City of Culture, then one should take a look at Daryl. A boy who was so timid at the beginning of the year, he barely had the courage to admit to his school friends that he played the piano, let alone loved music with a burning passion. Through the focus and support he has received from the City of Culture and its knock-on effects, Daryl has grown tenfold in stature and confidence and feels fully qualified to pursue a career in his beloved music. Being musician in residence here has gifted me a great many shared musical journeys. As I speak to you, I'm still finalising a piece for my grand performance on December the 7th. And as I draw closer to that musical conclusion, I realise more and more that the piece that I'm writing is by way of a small gift in return for the many I have received. I hope that the love and affection with which it is written will act as a kind of mirror, reflecting back on the people of the city what they truly are. Last words go to my young protege Daryl, who in thanking me for my mentoring this year gave me a card. On opening it, I found a letter and a £20 note. "Didn't know what to get you, so here's a drink," it said. In any other place, on receiving a drink in the top pocket from a 15-year-old lad, it would only be inappropriate to accept it. But here, in keeping with the wit, warmth and whole spirit of the place, and having seen his mum's face behind him contort at the suggestion of returning it, somehow taking the gesture with a smile and a bow seemed the only appropriate action. No doubt I will return the favour when the boy is old enough, for generosity is the currency here. That'll do.